Extension 720 here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 10 o'clock tonight. 312-981-7200. Excited to be with you here on the air. We are back. I think we're off tomorrow. The Hawks are on tomorrow night. We'll be back on Wednesday. Anywhere. Abby McEnany will be here. She's been a guest on this program before because she's a Chicago comedian, but she has got her big break. And she is a star of the new Showtime show, Work in Progress, which begins at the beginning of December. And so Abby's going to be in the talk about they shot it. They put it together. The first season's out. It's being produced by the Wachowskis. And so a lot that goes into Work in Progress, a show shot here in Chicago that will be premiering on Showtime coming up the beginning of December. Good for Abby. She'll be here on Wednesday. Well, we've been talking about movies a lot on Extension 720, right? I mean, the last couple weeks has just been movie overload. I'm so excited about it because if you're just joining us, we have been working diligently on a 64-seeded March Madness-like bracket for the best Chicago movie. And the goal is to get to the Sweet 16 so we can have the top 16 movies debated, argued, yelled about, bandied about here on this program, and then have you, the listeners, choose who moves on. And that's coming up in December. So I had the WGN staff vote on the first two rounds. And so we've got that completed. We did it over the weekend. The brackets were supposed to be in by today at 5 o'clock. It's over. The voting has been done. The first two rounds are done, and we're going to give you the Sweet 16 coming up a little bit later. But it's perfect that John Schmidt, our resident Extension 720 historian, who is the author of Hidden Chicago Landmarks, John has covered certain Hollywood, Hollywood birthplaces, places in Chicago that, of course, have a connection to the movie business and the Hollywood in your book, and you're here tonight. John, great to see you, buddy.
Glad to be here, Justin.
So that's what you would say, right? These are places in that famous people who've been in the entertainment industry and obviously theaters and other things Chicago.
Right.
Yeah. All right, so why don't we get right to it, right? Why don't we start with, of course, Walt Disney. Walt Disney's from, a lot of people don't realize that that Walt Disney was in Chicago.
Yeah, I had a friend of mine, Jan Vandekar, that grew up in this old neighborhood around the Walt Disney House, which is at birthplace is 2156 North Trip, and the people in the neighborhood, you know, they kind of had an idea that Walt Disney had lived in there at one time, or lived in the neighborhood, or gone to the school or something, but nobody exactly remembered where his exact house was, and this was like in the 1960s that she was talking about this, and part of the reason was the house numbers would change in Chicago, and any kind of reference book you got of where Walt Disney's birthplace was in Chicago, gave an address like something like 1312 or something like that Trip. But that was before the address numbers were changed.
Ah.
So anybody would come to Chicago and they'd look for Walt Disney's house. If they didn't know the address numbers had been changed, they'd
right.
go down to Trip and 13th Street. Well, anyway.
Right, they're at a Crate and Barrel. This does not look like where Walt Disney was born.
No. Well, anyway, let's go backward. Elias Disney, floor callers, Walt's parents, and they were from Florida. They got married in 1888, and Elias did a few things there. He had Orange Grove down in Florida, but it didn't make much of a success, and they had one son, and they moved to Chicago in the early 1890s. And you see, Elias was a carpenter, and they're having a World's Fair come to Chicago, the Columbian
right.
Exposition, 1893, so there'll be a lot of work. And at first, they got a house near the fair, which was on the south side. And then a little bit later, they decided they were going to build something a little bit further out. And so they got this plot of land in the district they called Hermosa, which was around what's today Pulaski and Fullerton in that general area. And over the course of 18 months, Elias started building this house. And he finally finished it in 1893.
Hmm.
Well, they did pretty well in Hermosa. He opened a business. He rented out other places, and he built a few rental units there, and he was active in the local church. When the minister was away, he'd even give sermons sometime. And finally, on December 5th, 1901, their fourth son was born. That was Walter Elias Disney, and he was born in the second floor of this house on Trip Avenue. And
he was born in the house, or that's where they lived?
He was born in the house.
Wow,
this
there you go.
This is 1901.
Yeah,
people were
you're
born
not, you're right.
born in the house.
This wasn't like an accident, like Seth Meyers and the Lobby Baby, like the Netflix special.
No,
this was,
no. My grandparents were born in the house where they grew up. Come to think of it, so was my mother. But anyway, the story...
That's a different book, right, John?
There are a lot of stories about Walt, about who he was named after and whether he was adopted. And there's some stories that say, oh, well, he was really born in Spain or in Missouri. Well, see, the problem was, another thing, he doesn't have a birth certificate. Things were a lot more slipshod in 1901. But anyway, he was born there. Take my word for it. And they stayed on Tripp Avenue until 1906. And that winter, two of the boys from the church tried to pull off a robbery, and they wound up getting in trouble. They killed a cop. So Elias decides he doesn't want his kids to grow up in that atmosphere, in a big city atmosphere. So he sells the house, unloads these rental cottages that he had in partnership, and he moves off to Missouri. And they stayed in Missouri for many years. And Walt had just turned 4 years old. And he didn't have any memories of the house. But in 1917, they moved back to Chicago. And this time, Elias was investing in a jelly-making factory. And this time, they lived on the near west side. He lived at 1523 West Ogden. Now, that building's gone. And Walt enrolled as a freshman at McKinley High School. And that's not a high school anymore. It's a charter school. It's on Adams and Damon, approximately. Anyway, he drew cartoons for the local school paper. He took classes at night. After a year, he left, went off to World War I. He was not in combat. He was an ambulance driver, and he never again lived in Chicago.
Wow. John, I was going to say, obviously this is a big story, and it's a story that you could research it, but has Chicago done anything to sort of make that fanfare, to make that a tourist destination, to talk about when Walt Disney was in Chicago?
Well, yeah, about 15 years ago, when they were putting up landmarks in this city, when they were determining landmarks, they wanted to landmark the cottage. And the guy that lived there said, no, I don't want you to landmark this cottage. You make it a landmark.
So Chicago.
I can't.
Yeah,
do
I
want
to change.
I can't change anything.
I want to put an above ground pool in the back.
Yeah,
I can't.
By that time, they had siding on and everything. So anyway, finally, what happened is I think it was 2013. It was purchased by a couple from California, and they decided to make it a museum. And for the last 5-6 years. They've been working on it as a museum. And I've driven past it lately. The picture I got in a book is the old picture with siding from a few years ago. But now they're making it look more like it was in 1901. And as I say in the book, a lot of these historic places are private residences. Don't bother people. But this one's a museum.
Right.
You know, look on their website. Go visit them. That's Walt Disney's.
Well, purpose. when I was just this summer, we went to. I think I told the story on the show that we went to Astoria in Oregon, and that's where they shot the Goonies movie. And the Goonies, Steven Spielberg, are in mid-'80s, and that town really is celebrated for it because they have a huge, you know, where they most of the scenes that were shot, they have tourist stuff around it.
Oh,
but
sure.
The actual house where they lived and they had the contraption, and that's, you know, like the big scene where they were at. That's a private residence, and they had to put up signs on that street that said, do not stop. Do no standing, no parking, you'll be towed. Do not stop to take a picture of this house because the private resident was fed up with people on the property.
Oh, it depends on what town you're in. When first time I was in Ireland, we went up to the town of Cong, and that's where they shot The Quiet Man in the 1950s. And the main street still looks the same. And they sell all kinds of Quiet Men stuff. They tell you about, the old-timers tell you about what happened. And that movie was already 60 years old when we were there. And it's interesting.
Well, I'm glad that they're making it a museum. That's cool. We'll check it out.
Yeah.
What's the address for that again?
The address is at 2156 North Tripp Avenue, the corner of Tripp and Palmer.
There you go. Tripp and Palmer, Walt Disney's home. All right, let's move on to the next one. You want to talk about the Central Park Theater?
Yeah, the Central Park Theater. You got to go back over 100 years. Before we had TV, before you had video games, the internet, everybody went to the movies all the time. Even back early 20th century, because you didn't have much to do then. And it started, in the 1920s, you see some of these old theaters that are around, very opulent theaters. Back where I live is the Pickwick Theater in Park Ridge,
right.
Many of the theaters. Well, the first one of these theaters was the Central Park Theater. in Chicago on the west side, and that's at 3535 West Roosevelt Road, or 12th Street as it was in those days, and it's still standing there. It's a church now, but the building is still there. And the way it got started was in these early days of movies. The early movies were just like, you know, a few minutes long. They were silent movies. And in 1907, there was this Russian Jewish family on the west side, the Belbin family. And one of the teenage sons got a job singing in this little vaudeville theater on Kedzie Avenue, on Kedzie and 12th Street. And the place over there also showed these 15-minute little movies, silent movies. And one day, the boy's mother decided to come in, and she got impressed by the whole thing, you know, because she thought, wow, you know, people come in, they spend their money, and then they see it. It's great. This is a great business plan.
What a great
Nobody
idea.
Can owe us
right,
money. They
right.
pay the money up front. So she gets together with the family, and they sink the money together, $400, and they start off with a little Nickelodeon. It was called Nickelodeon because that's what people paid, a nickel. And it was kind of primitive. And in those days, 1907, you had a bed sheet and little folding chairs. And that was okay, but things were changing. And in 1915, landmark movie comes out, Birth of a Nation.
Mm-hmm.
Racist movie, totally racist movie, but was also a landmark because it was a full-length movie, what we call full-length movie today. A lot of innovations for movies, and it was a big hit. I think President Woodrow Wilson supposedly said it's like writing history with lightning. Now the Belbins were watching this, and they thought, gee, movies are going to be grand. They're going to need a grander place. So once again, they put their money together. In the fall of 1917, they build this place, and it's the first movie palace. Okay, 1,780 seats.
Wow.
And it's versatile. They could besides movies.
This is nowhere near downtown Chicago.
This is on the west side, North Lawndale, which Jewish neighborhood.
Let me do this. Let's take a break here. And when we come back, let's find out what happened to that theater and how it progressed. And obviously, the west side has changed since the time of the Central Park Theater. We'll talk about the theater and much, much more. Hidden Chicago Landmarks is the book, the author, John Schmidt, tonight here on Extension 720. Stay with us. Justin Kaufman with you here, Extension 720. John Schmidt is here. He's the author of Hidden Chicago Landmarks. Talk about some of the hidden Chicago history when it comes to entertainment and Hollywood, and the Central Park Theater falls into this category. Because before the Central Park Theater, there was nothing like it. You said, how many seats were in this West Side Theater?
1,780 seats.
Jeez.
Most of the little theaters they had, like, 50 seats or 100 maybe if they were lucky. And this was a big movie palace. But the other thing about it, it was air conditioned. Now, beforehand, in the summer, what they used to do is they put a block of ice someplace and roll a fan over to something. But again, one of the Belbin family, he'd worked in the stockyards, and he knew what the state of the art was for air conditioning in 1917. So they air conditioned the theater, and people in the dog days of summer, the thing opened at 9:30 and closed at midnight. And if you had a dime. It wasn't Nickelodeon. It's dime expensive. You could take a little vacation there. And a lot of people did, I guess.
Yeah, Nickelodeons were that was main. This was premiere. This was a dime.
And people that are old in Chicago will remember Belbin and Katz. That started the local movie chain, which opened a lot of the big theaters in Chicago, the Oriental, the Roosevelt, the United Artists, and all these things out in the outer regions of the city.
Yeah, right.
Well, during the 1960s, movies became popular and many movie theaters closed. Central Park closed in 1971. And it was converted into a church. And in 2004, it showed a movie again because in the meantime, the neighborhood of North Lawndale had changed from Jewish to African American. And the movie it showed was a movie called Within Our Gates by a black producer called Oscar Michel, and he produced this movie in 1920 as a response to the Birth of a Nation, this racist movie.
Oh, so he produced it back then, right?
Yeah, and you can actually see the movie. You can see it on the internet, and it's an interesting movie that he replaced. Well, anyway, the Central Park Theater today, it's still a church. It's fallen on some kind of hard times. They tried to restore it. The city came in and they said, well, it needs such and such structural restructuring,
right,
and
right,
so on.
Right.
So we don't know what the future of it is. It's still operating as a church, as far as I can say. I drove by there, and it still looks like it's in business, but I don't know. I'm supposed to check with the
there
website.
There you go. The Central Park Theater on the west side of Chicago. All right, our final one tonight. Let's talk about the Marx Brothers, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Another, you know, harken back to the days of great Hollywood, but you don't think about the Marx Brothers when you think of Chicago, but they have a big part of it here.
Oh, yeah. From 1912 to 1920, they lived at on 4512, what's now 4512 South King Drive. And they were originally New Yorkers, and Sam was the father. He was a tailor. He was kind of easygoing. Now, Minnie, she was the one. She had the brains and the brass in the family. Years later, they made a Broadway musical called Minnie's Boys, and she was played by Shelley Winters. If you remember Shelley Winters, picture Shelley Winters in your head, and you got Minnie Marx. Anyway, she's raising her sons for careers in show business. And during the first years of this new 20th century, when they were in their teens, they started singing in vaudeville. Now, it's still in New York, okay? But then they moved to Chicago in 1912, and various reasons are given. One story claims that there was a New York theatrical booker. He said, your kids never got any talent, you know. You know, they're not going to make it. Another story says that Minnie had a brother. His name was Al Sheehan, and he was a vaudeville comic, and so she figured, well, come here, Uncle Al will help the kids get it started. Anyway, probably the reason was Chicago's railroad capital's in the middle of the country.
They had a strong vaudeville circuit at the time.
Yeah, and you can get around easier. So anyway, actually in 1910 is when they first moved here, and they got a two-flat walk-up at 4649 South Calumet, and 2 years later, Minnie scrapes together a down payment, $1,000, and they buy that gray stone on the boulevard. And the thing was, the mortgage was held by their next-door neighbor. He was a man called Greenbaum. And he became like the family boogeyman. And whenever the brothers were complaining that mama was working them too hard, all she'd have to do was say, Greenbaum. And then they'd shut up and they'd get back to business. Well, okay, by 1917 then, World War I, U.S. gets into World War I. Okay, and they got a draft in World War I. Well, you know, they weren't, their careers are just starting to take off, and the older brothers, they're not too enthusiastic about going in the military. But Minnie had read that farmers are exempt from military service, so she bought a farm. And now that farm, I think the house is probably gone. But anyway, if anyone goes look for it, it's in the intersection of LaGrange and Joliet Roads out near countryside. And they raised chickens and rabbits and guinea pigs. And Groucho told the story later. Said, we didn't do anything. Anytime anybody used to come to visit, I have to drive in the Lombard and I have to buy some eggs and put them under the chickens to fool people or not. But
that was all to just avoid going to the draft.
Yeah. And
one
of the brothers got drafted. Gummo got drafted. He wasn't much of an entertainer anyway, so he didn't care. They didn't care. So they stuck with four of them. So 1920, they sold the Grand Boulevard, which it was known then. They moved back to New York, and eventually they picked up a good, a great career, of course, in New York. But the funny thing is, when they were asked to put their fingerprints and footprints in Grauman's Chinese Theater, you know, Groucho comes up and says, oh, yeah, we know all about cement. We used to live in Chicago. But anyway, that gravestone is still there. It's got an official Chicago distinction marker, 4512 South King Drive. It's a private residence. Don't bother the people there. And I don't know.
It's all of your history.
I don't know.
Don't bother the people. That should be the name of the book.
I don't know if it's still owned by anybody named Green Bob, but as I said, don't bother the people there. Drive by.
But there is a plaque that says that's where the Marx Brothers
live. There is a Chicago marker distinction in front of it.
What about the farm and countryside? No, they'd left that one to be?
That we mentioned in the book, maybe countryside will put up something. Who knows?
Well, you know, I mentioned this before we let you go. I mentioned, you know, we were doing the Chicago movie bracket. And one of the movies, obviously all these movies have great spots, but one of the movies I was just talking in the break about is Cooley High.
Oh, yeah.
And that has places all over Chicago.
Oh, yeah, Cooley High. Yeah, it's a funny thing about Cooley High, because you try to follow the geography of what they're driving. They get on a bus, and they're going to go to Lincoln Park, and somehow they wind up at Kimball and Lawrence to get on the L, and then they wind up back at Cooley High. And you know, that's a great movie. Cooley High, the building is gone. It used to be. In fact, the original building was the original Lane Tech at the northeast corner of Sedgwick and Division. And then it went through a bunch of other manifestations over the year, and now it's gone. But that's a great movie to see, too. Great Chicago movie.
Great Chicago movie. And a great Chicago historian, John Schmidt, the book, Hidden Chicago Landmarks. We'll be back next week. We'll talk holiday history with some of the stuff that's in the book, maybe mid-December or so. John, great to see you. Thanks for being here, bud.
Okay.